This is Internet Governance Explained. We're Paulina and Carolina, and today we'll talk about China's approach to internet governance. To give us his expert insight on the topic, we have John Lee, senior analyst from the Mercator Institute for China Studies, or MERIX. He coordinates work in the MERIX research cluster on China's use of digital technology. The focus of his research lies in the emerging and foundational technologies in China's domestic development and international relations, China's science and innovation policies, and China's approach to governance of the internet and cyberspace. I will now hand the word over to my fellow podcast interviewer, Carolina.
Hello, you all. From me, Carolina, I would like to welcome our guest, John Lee, and I start with the first question. So, John, at first glance, a stable authoritarian government model and digitalization appear to be two contradictory concepts. How does actually China manage it?
I think the first thing to bear in mind is that China is not the only country that's imposing restrictions on the unfettered flow of information across the internet. So we can come in a moment to the unique aspects of the Chinese model, but to put it in context, countries all over the world, including Western countries, have been steadily encroaching on the unlimited concept of internet freedom that we inherited from the 90s. And I suppose that the debate over proper regulation of social media that's unfolding in the United States at the moment, in the context of the role of social media and what happened in Washington, D.C. 2 weeks ago, is the case in point there. And of course, here in Europe, there's a suite of legislation which is working its way through the European system at the moment, which will impose quite intrusive regulation on online behavior, data management by internet platforms, etc. So that's the larger context in which to talk about China's internet authoritarianism is a matter of degree. It's not the case that internet freedom exists in a completely unregulated form anywhere, and the trend is actually in most countries towards more rather than less control by governments. Mm-hmm. Now, to touch briefly on China's model for governance of the internet, over the last 5 or 6 years, soon after Xi Jinping came into power, China has been extending a system, what's called a Xitong in the Chinese parlance, of governance for the cyber domain. And one of the catalysts for that, of course, was the revelations of Edward Snowden, which showed China's top leadership just how vulnerable Chinese cyberspace was to penetration by the US government in particular, and also shone a light on just how little China had in fact regulated many aspects of the internet for the decade and a half, 2 decades that it had been connected to Chinese networks. So what we have now basically is a centralized system of institutions and an expanding network of regulation by which the Chinese government attempts to exert control over Chinese cyberspace. Mm-hmm. There are different aspects to that, of course. Censorship is what people are most familiar with, the moderation of content that is transferred over the Chinese internet. But there are also many other aspects, such as cybersecurity regulation, control over data transfers, and so on, which we can go into over the course of this podcast.
Okay, yeah, exactly. That is what we also know, that there's a lot of different aspects to this, to China's model. And so I guess the question is, how does China manage to have this approach or this model, but at the same time be so highly developed and digitalized?
Well, this is nested in a broader discussion about whether economic development and technological progress are tied to freedom of expression and other civil liberties that we privilege in Western countries or not. And I think that a good argument can be made either way, in fact. But if we're talking about the information domain and the internet specifically, then I would say that China has basically walked a fine line for the last 20 years. Between throttling the advantages that come with the free information flow that the internet enables with the centralized control that China as a Leninist state privileges. Now, some people would argue that they're coming to the limits of what is possible with this, and that it will in fact become inconsistent or incompatible for the Chinese state to continue exerting such a high degree of control over information flows and at the same time giving Chinese society the space to continue developing, whether it's in terms of hard science and technology or in the soft technologies and other forms of cultural expression that are needed or which we conceive of in terms of social development. But on the other hand, there are also new technologies becoming available, such as artificial intelligence, big data processing, and so on, which provide tools that were unavailable even a decade ago to the Chinese authorities. And this, of course, also needs to be taken into account.
Yeah, in that sense, because just you mentioned some of the challenges that they already have and they will have in the future, which do you think there are the most important challenges that you will have with this approach of internet governance in China?
My own view on this is that, in fact, China's control of its domestic information space is quite secure. So my assessment, and of course others will disagree on this, is that the Chinese state does not face significant political challenges at home. If you want to look at a case study, then what's happened with the internet giant Alibaba and Jack Ma specifically over the last few months is a case in point. I mean, you compare that to the lack of discipline which has been imposed on platforms like Facebook and Twitter and their CEOs, Google and so on, in Western countries, and the contrast is quite stark. It is not just the average citizen in China who is effectively controlled by the Chinese state in terms of what they can do on the internet. Even very powerful actors like the Chinese internet platform giants, it is now clear, can be effectively controlled by the Chinese state through a variety of mechanisms without killing the golden goose. So as far as the internal facing piece is concerned, I don't see a great problem there, particularly with the new tools that I just mentioned, artificial intelligence, big data analytics, which will provide the Chinese state with ever more means of surveilling and nipping in the bud dissent in the online space. Real problem and the threat perception on the part of the Chinese authorities is from outside. And I already mentioned that really the genesis of the very centralized and directive approach to internet governance that we've seen under Xi Jinping was what Edward Snowden showed to the world and Chinese leadership about just how vulnerable China's networks are to foreign state actors with more sophisticated capabilities.
So you already mentioned all that this is not very sustainable in time, and you gave some solutions actually, but how do you think this is going to be the future for internet governance in China?
I think one thing we need to clarify first, because the Chinese internet is often talked of as a splinter net, as a separate internet, is that even such a thing. The Chinese internet is part of the global internet. The basic infrastructure is the same as that which runs the internet everywhere else in the world. This is the source of the problem, because the internet, of course, was designed to be a seamlessly interoperable system. It emerged, actually, as I'm sure that you and most of your listeners will know, in a secure environment, indeed as a US Department of Defense project. So the basic technology is actually anti-control. And this has been the challenge for governments like China and increasingly governments around the world in terms of how to impose controls on that. So what the Chinese have done, or the Chinese state rather, over the past two decades is basically put the equivalent of customs barriers of the sort that you have to pass through at the airport to get into any country physically between Chinese networks and the outside world, which police the traffic going in and out. And within or behind those customs barriers, there is a very high degree of state surveillance and regulation, which does not apply in most other parts of the world. However, at the same time, that walled garden is completely connected to the outside world. So this will, I suppose, be the field on which decoupling in the digital space is played. Just exactly how, in a context where, in fact, the pressures for decoupling are coming from outside China, from the US government in particular, this situation is going to change over the next decade or two.
Do you think in any way this is going to make China be an outsider? Because it, in one way, globalization is taking place and everything is, in a way, becoming more connected. But at the same time, we see different countries, including China, focusing on their own cyber sovereignty?
I think it's important to widen the lens beyond just the transatlantic space. My experience is that these issues are often talked about in the context of US and European data regulation. But of course, the next billion internet users, as they say, are not coming from Europe or from the United States. They're coming from developing countries where Chinese digital technology is entrenching itself and is, despite everything, still expanding. And I think that, again, many of your listeners will be familiar with the extensive presence of Chinese telco technology in Africa. Chinese of mobile phone markets, which are basically almost 90-100% dominated by Chinese brands, of countries with entire telecommunications networks, including their future next networks, 5G and 6G, are being built by Huawei and ZTE. This is the picture in the developing world. So that is, I suppose, the starting point that we have to remember. This is not just China versus the Western world. There is a very significant third space in which a lot of the competition will be played out. If we are talking about the Western world, then I think that the trend is quite clear by this point. Although, ironically enough, here in Germany, one of the most important markets, we still don't have any clarity on exactly what participation will be allowed to Chinese firms going forward. But the general trend is clear that Chinese vendors will be increasingly excluded, and quite likely other types of Chinese digital tech players like the internet platforms. Some of that is deliberate. Some of that is going to result from inertia. For example, the expanding European data governance regime is, because of many incompatibilities with China's data governance regime, I would say going to force certain extent of decoupling. And in fact, Merricks and the European Chamber of Commerce in China have just released an extensive report on this very subject. But again, it is a mixed picture, and you do see continuing interactions between Western companies and Chinese companies, including Huawei, in, for example, the transnational technical standard setting forums that provide the, if you like, rules of the road for a lot of these new digital technological developments.
Yeah, that, I think that's a really good point about this perspective that it always seemed like from the Western eyes. And that is a really good point. I think that's giving me some more of a different perspective to look at things.
This topic. I think the Western world actually relies a lot on the challenges they had and not actually the solutions that China is providing. So in that sense, like, do you think that there are some things that actually the Western world could learn and take from this model, from the Chinese internet model?
Well, again, if we use the example capital and the way that's focused attention on the need to regulate internet platforms, I would suggest that learning from the Chinese model is the wrong frame. Again, many of these are universal problems, and the question is where you fall along the spectrum. And there has been a debate unfolding in the Western countries, more so, I would argue, in Europe than in the US, quite separately from the issue of China's specific approach over the proper balance to strike in regulating, for example, the big internet platforms. I mean, just to use an example, the EU Commissioner Thierry Breton wrote a piece in Politico basically advocating for Europe's data governance approach a few days after the Capitol riots, using them effectively as a case study for where unregulated internet platform behavior can get a society. So certainly the idea that we can have a completely unregulated internet, I would say, apart from a very fringe element, no longer has much traction in the policy debate. The question is the balance to be struck. And there, of course, again, it is normally within Western countries couched in terms of the domestic space and the trade-off between civil liberties and the wider security of society. But of course, there's an international political aspect here as well. And perhaps that's a good segue to China's cyber diplomacy. But of course, it's your podcast, so I'll give it to you.
Okay, yeah, that's thank you so much. That is interesting. I think it's hard to apply something that apply from China in different contexts. It's also just culturally and overall very different. And just our last question, a little bit of like an outlook to the future. What are some of China's main goals related to digital governance that could be expected to develop in 2021? Are there some projects on the agenda that we should watch out for?
Perhaps it's useful to break this up into three broad avenues. So firstly, if we talk about domestic governance, then continuing to solidify China's cyber governance regime will be the first priority. As I mentioned, China has been over the past few years unrolling and expanding carpet of regulation, laws, non-binding legal regulations, cybersecurity standards, which will give the Chinese state effectively complete transparency or close to it of what's going on Chinese networks. And that obviously has also an external facing security dimension, which we'll get to. But the one aspect to that is also the famous social credit system, which you read so much about in Western media. That is moving into an implementation phase, although the coverage and the extent of digitization of the system tends to be overstated. Now, if we talk about the international stage, I would say, and again, there is also a domestic aspect to this, two levels. One is the technological foundations of cyberspace, because of course, although cyberspace is a non-physical domain, it has physical foundations in terms of the hard technologies that it is encoded in. And in those hard technologies, what the Chinese call core technologies, there are still significant vulnerabilities to the Western countries especially. So if we take semiconductors, for example, processing chips, which get a lot of attention in the commentary around geoeconomics these days, and the US campaign to cut off Huawei at the knees and to cripple China's digital technological rise, China still imports about 90% of its semiconductor needs. I mean, these are the technologies on which basically every computing process runs. So gaining greater self-reliance in these technologies, import substitution, and the ability to build these foundational technologies themselves is a top priority in Chinese strategic and industrial policy. And that's reinforced in speech after policy document after speech by China's top leadership. And the final element is, of course, cyber diplomacy. And here I would say that we can expect more of the same. China has an international strategy for cooperation in cyberspace. China's President Xi Jinping and Chinese diplomats frequently emphasize in international forums the need for a more equalized balance of power in cyberspace, which can be read as less dominance, again, of core technologies and of core governance processes and forums by the Western countries, as has been traditionally the case, and try to position China as a leader, basically, again, of the wider developing world in pushing back against Western hegemony. Now, obviously, there's some gap between rhetoric and practice there, but I think it was noteworthy that, for example, just before the high-level digital dialogue between the EU and one of China's highest-level officials last year, China, of course, announced a data security initiative, which itself followed the US government's various measures, including the sanctions against Huawei and the other measures announced by the Trump administration in the data management space, designed basically to drive a wedge between China and other Western countries. So there will be more attempts to counteract the very strong positions which have been taken by the US government in terms of casting China as a threat in cyberspace, which of course also connects with many serious concerns about the cyber espionage practices of the Chinese state, which exist among many countries in terms of diplomatic initiatives such as the Data Security Initiative and other forthcoming programs.
Okay, thank you. That was very elaborate.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. That's actually very instructive for us.
This was Internet Governance Explained, today with Carolina and Polina. Thank you all for listening. You can find us on all the main podcast platforms. Till the next one.